Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, back in 2015, I wrote a 19-part series on Daniel chapter 11. Yeah, 19 parts. The first set of articles are listed in the transcript with a link there, and the second part also has another link. So you'll want to avail yourself of that if you're interested in understanding the contents of Daniel 11, just that one chapter. Now, Daniel 11 is really a continuation of Daniel 10, which, of course, is a continuation of Daniel 9. Now, where Daniel receives a message from an angelic being, the unnamed angel in Daniel 11 came to Daniel after he had been praying, fasting, and mourning for 21 days. That's in verse 2. And the messenger tells Daniel that his prayers had been heard, and a response was dispatched to him immediately through this angelic messenger, except for the prince of Persia, who kept the angel from arriving to Daniel immediately. And that's verses 12 and 13. Now, this insight helps us better understand Paul's assertion in Ephesians 6:12 that says, "We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." Unquote. Of course, Paul is talking about the activity in beings in the spiritual realm, not in our physical plane. And he notes that our real problem lies not in a fight against other human beings, but against those powerful beings who exist in the heavenly realm and whose goal it is to thwart God's purposes. That's what they exist for. Obviously, they need to thwart God's purposes, because if God wins, and he will, then they are all going to end up, along with their leader, Satan, in the lake of fire. Now, while it may appear to us at times, really, when you stop and think about this, that human beings are the problem, right? Well, in truth, people are simply being motivated by unseen spiritual forces, much the way God is able to motivate Gog, G-O-G, to do something that Gog actually thinks is his own idea, in Ezekiel 38:10-11. Now, as I was reading Daniel chapters 10 through 12 the other day, I was again struck with a number of questions. First, while I understand that prayer, on its most rudimentary level, is talking with God, it is actually far more than that. In this particular instance, Daniel had been praying and fasting and mourning, and he had done so for 21 days, 3 full weeks. Why? Well, we can assume it was because of Daniel's concern for his own people, Israel, that made him want to pursue God however long it took. It may well have been God who prompted Daniel to pray in such a way. We really don't know. The fact that the prince of Persia, though, harassed the angelic messenger, keeping him from getting the answer to Daniel immediately, which wasn't the case in Daniel 9, seems to indicate that maybe God was behind it. Now, of course, it may also have been that God wanted Daniel to develop another layer of patience, therefore allowed him to wait for 21 days. So what follows in Daniel 11 is the detail of future prophecy related to Israel from Daniel's POV. There is tremendous, minute detail shared with Daniel, and all of it, interestingly enough, before it ever happens. Now, of course, it is the same level of detail that prompts liberal theologians to deny that the Daniel actually wrote this book before things happened, but that it was actually some second century person who simply took the name Daniel and looked backward to record then history. I mean, these types of theologians seem unable to appreciate the fact that God is God, and therefore omniscient, omnipotent, and everything else that aligns with his eternal character. Obviously, God exists outside of our time, but certainly can come into our timeline whenever he wants without corrupting his own character. And since he normally resides outside of our time, everything that occurs within time is seen by him as always, always in the eternal present. How hard then would it be for God to move people or design things so that humanity still maintains their free will, right? Yet God still gets things done his way. It wouldn't be difficult at all. Satan, at best, can only watch and try to learn, but in the end he is seriously hampered solely because of his complete lack of omniscience. It doesn't matter how wise or intelligent he is, and I'm sure his intelligence far surpasses the most intelligent human being who has ever lived, but that lack of omniscience, it does him in. So the messenger tells Daniel what is to occur, and even though no names are mentioned in the text, it has been relatively easy for historians and Bible experts to determine who these individuals were in history. Now, the end of Daniel 11 is believed to provide details of the rise and fall of the future final global ruler Antichrist after highlighting the failures of Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who is a type, I should say, who was a type of Antichrist. And even if you disagree that this last section of Daniel 11 foretells of the coming Antichrist, surely you stand in awe of the accurate information contained in Daniel 11. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the end of time. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Well, the above verse, Daniel 12:4, and if you're reading the transcript, I added the emphasis there. It indicates that all information shared with Daniel was not for Daniel, because everything revealed to him was either for a near future, relatively speaking, or a far future, until the end, until the time of the end. All that was revealed to Daniel points to God appearing to let things play out without being directly involved, doesn't it? But at the same time, he absolutely could have been thoroughly involved. What we're seeing in Daniel 11 is simply from the human point of view. We don't see behind the scenes. Now, in Daniel 11, we also see a true Game of Thrones with plenty of intrigue, deception, double-crossing, and massacres of innocent people because of the warmongering minds of a few rulers. And in spite of all this, God seems to have done nothing overt, at least, nothing obvious to direct or change these events, but he could have without it being stated or implied in the text. Obviously, God controls outcomes, doesn't he? There are so many facts here. The individual rulers of the north and the south kingdoms relative to Israel, the specificities of rulers, including the first three Antiochus rulers to Antiochus Epiphanes IV, Berenice, Laodice, Cleopatra, and goes on. Much of Daniel 11 is an amazing future history from Daniel's perspective and a fulfilled past history from ours. Yet God could have done exactly what he does with Gog in Ezekiel 38 through 39 without telling us. But all of this brings me to the subject of prayer. I mean, that's what the title of this is, isn't it? It's called Prayer, Why Bother? And I don't mean that sarcastically. It's a good question. It's a good question. So what we've got here is the subject of prayer. Daniel was a man of prayer. That is obvious. He spent much time communing with God. When there was a problem, he took it to God. What is notable is that many of the things that were revealed to Daniel did not necessarily affect him directly, but would affect the people of Israel and other nations in years to come. Yet God chose to enlighten Daniel, and in turn, God has enlightened us. So where does prayer come in for the Christian? Honestly, it is not an easy thing for me to answer for myself. The other day, I took a 7-mile hike with my dog in a local state park. It was enjoyable, got me out of the office and out of the house for a bit. And while on the trail, I talked with God. I just kind of poured out my heart as I was walking and hiking. I considered that if the coming tribulation is around the corner, there's nothing that'll change that. The path has been decided. I can pray asking God to grant the world a reprieve, but he is under no obligation to grant that request. And in that case, I can pray that, well, if it's not his will to rebuke globalists and put them in their place, get them out of the way, that he will grant instead an ability for me and all Christians to have the ability to bear up under it with the strength to continue to serve him. I mean, most are aware that, for instance, Biden, Pelosi, Fauci, and others originally stated not that long ago that mandating the vaccine for everyone is not something the federal government can do, just didn't have the power. And they're on record in video stating that. Yet all of a sudden, mandating vaccines for 80 million people is apparently something the federal government can do. A vaccine mandate is now on the table, forcing businesses to comply with the federal government or risk thousands of dollars in fines. Now, in reality, the federal government does not have the type of power they are attempting to wield, and individual states here in the United States are starting to push back. There is something very, very unprecedented about this entire thing. So I prayed. I prayed that my wife's place of employment will not force employees who essentially work out of their homes and never go to work-related conferences or offices to be exempt from such a mandate. I could pray that God will cause that illegal mandate to come to nothing, but honestly, I'm not sure that God would answer that in the affirmative. He can, however, protect my wife, though he may choose to allow her work to force vaccines even on her. I'm not in danger, supposedly, because I'm retired, although if Biden's mandate goes into effect without any pushback, what's to stop him from mandating that retirement monies and Social Security payments be halted until the receiver is vaxxed? What's to stop him? That could also be illegal, and it probably is, but would that stop President Biden? I don't think so. So I pray that in spite of what appears to be coming our way with greater fascism and loss of freedoms, that God would give me the ability to handle it as though all of this were coming from God himself. Certainly he's allowing it. As I've repeatedly stated in many articles I've written here, we really do not know how bad things will get prior to the rapture and the actual start of the coming tribulation, do we? But even if you do not see either of these events in Scripture, you've got to admit that things are progressively worsening, with the government demanding we do certain things. And I have a problem with that, and I know that many other people do as well. Logic dictates that things will incrementally worsen in evil, ugliness, and greater fascism. We're already on that path. It's not just going to stop all by itself. Now, this does not mean that God has no grip on things. It simply means that he allows things to play out on the human scene because he is intimately knowledgeable about everything that will occur from every possible angle. Yet he is able to still allow those things to occur and also bring the perfection of his will to pass, all for his glory. It is a mind-boggling thing to consider, really. So Daniel committed himself to pray in the opening verses of Daniel 10, and we know why. We know that he prayed because of what we learned in Daniel 9, right at the end of it. That chapter begins another way with Daniel's earnest prayer because of what he had read in the scroll of Jeremiah dealing with the 70 years of captivity, which Daniel was also experiencing, and he realized that those 70 years were coming to an end. So Daniel prays. Gabriel comes to provide him with a much-needed information that was at best an indirect response to much of Daniel's prayer. What Daniel prayed for did not occur in Daniel's time. It happened to an extent much later, and some of it still remains to occur from our point of view until the end of this age. And remember, this age is the age of Christ's birth. That takes us all the way up to the next age, which is when he returns physically. So God answered Daniel's prayer, not for Daniel, but for us, really, those living at the end of this age. And that's why where I believe we are right now. What I learned about prayer in Daniel is that we must always be careful to pray the same way Jesus prayed, not my will, but thine be done, Luke 22:42. Now, Daniel did not say those specific words, but I think it's implied in the way he was praying. We pray really just like Daniel did, to do what? Learn and embrace God's will. It is not to see God as a celestial genie in the sky, someone who waits expectantly for us to ask him for anything, and hey, if we only have the needed faith, he's gonna do it. So, the reasoning goes, if we do not get proper answers to our prayers, or answers that we were hoping for, it's not God, it's because we lack the faith to make it happen. How many times have you heard that? But this is not what the Bible teaches in its entirety. Daniel prayed for forgiveness for Israel. He asked the Lord to be merciful, reminding God of his great mercy. He was praying that God's anger would turn away and allow Israel to gain freedom, where once again they could worship God in Jerusalem without being under the thumb of another nation and empire. Well, Gabriel comes to Daniel with a bit of a play on words, telling him that it's not 70 years, Daniel, but it's 70 times 7 years, or 70 weeks, totaling 490 years. Now, imagine how disappointing that must have been to Daniel. God essentially said, hey, I've heard your prayer, and what you're asking for will not happen soon. The captivity of Israel would remain even beyond Jeremiah's 70 years of captivity prophecy, to the tune of 490 years total, though Jews would be allowed to return to their land, but they would not be completely free. Most conservative commentators believe we are between the 69th and the 70th week, quote unquote. And I've got a link for that in the transcript, and I've written numerous articles and even a small book on that subject. It's called Between Weeks. So it's interesting that while God took the time to respond to Daniel via several angelic messengers, it was not really what Daniel wanted to hear, was it? I'm sure he was grateful, though, but I think he was looking for something else. The many examples throughout the Bible indicate that we must persevere in prayer until we can emotionally come to a point of releasing our desires, exchanging them for God's, just like Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane, Luke 22:39-46. That was his prayer. Father, not my will, but yours be done. This is not an easy thing to do, is it? It didn't seem like it was that easy for Jesus, yet he did it. It may take time for us, requiring repeated going back to him, giving up our wants and desires in prayer, exchanging them for what we believe may be God's will, is very hard because it involves submitting our will to him, and it involves giving up our desires for what we believe to be his. Now, again, it took Jesus 3 times in the Garden of Gethsemane before he was able to finally let it go. And there was no sin in that or failure on his part. He eventually found the victory over his, warring emotions and desires, bringing them both in line with the Father's will. I do not know an easy way to do this. Do you? But that's what makes up the struggle we often enter into through prayer. Let me give you an example. When my sister was on her deathbed in a coma, well, you can bet I prayed daily that God would heal her. Other Christians and family members I knew were praying the same thing. Her eventual death had nothing to do with our faith or lack of it, and everything to do with the fact that it was her time to leave this earth in death for the next life. Nothing would change that. No amount of praying would change God's mind. I eventually had to come to a point of accepting what appeared to be his will in the matter. It was not easy, but I finally was able to say, okay, Lord, if it is her time to go to be with you, then your will be done. It was very painful for me because my sister and I were very close. Yet she is so much better off now as she is with the Lord. She's missing all the garbage that this world is going through. I'll see her one day. When I was finally able to release things emotionally and embrace his will, I had peace over the situation. Ultimately, until I learn differently, prayer is what the Christian enters into in order to ultimately come to terms with and accept God's will. We eventually learn to pray for his will to happen, not my will but thine be done, should become the attitude of every Christian as we approach our Lord in prayer for all things. There is absolutely nothing wrong with asking God for specific things we would like to see occur. Jesus did it. Garden of the Gethsemane. Lord, if it's possible, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will but thine be done. However, that's what we should always be doing. We should always be willing to set our wants aside if God chooses another course of action. We are His servants. He is the master. We do not dictate to Him. What servant tells the master what to do? Asking is one thing. Insisting is something else. Submitting and embracing the master's will is our portion, or at least should be. I'm dealing with several things at the moment that I'm having a very difficult time leaving with Him. So the only options I have in front of me is to continue to grab on and hold those things or persevere, trusting that hopefully soon I'll successfully leave them at His feet and accept His outcomes for these situations. Now, I don't know for you if what I've been talking about today has been helpful or not. I hope it has been, and certainly it is not the final word on prayer. The Bible is the final word. I just hope that what I've said struck a chord, and maybe you can relate to it. We as Christians need to come to a point with every prayer concern that we have that we are willing to give those desires we might have in that situation up and embrace His will for that situation. May we approach Him with the aim of letting go of the things that we cling to and committing ourselves to asking ultimately and only that in all things His will and purposes will be accomplished in and through us. I thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Fred. You've been listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. And until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.